It's Friday. Welcome to the Malloy program. It is summertime now, so this is Camp Malloy during summer. Did you hear the good news? Oh my God, there was some good news today. Gasoline prices are going down. Ooh! Yeah, gas prices are going down. They had, they being one of the networks, I guess it was ABC, they were talking about how 50 cents a gallon drop in some areas of the city, and on some areas of the country, 50 cents a gallon. And they were interviewing people at gas pumps, you know, people who were filling up their tanks. And people were saying, yeah, this is going to save me. This is going to save me $8 a week, which would be $32 a month. And people were just beside themselves with the joy of it all. $32! That means we can go on vacation. We can buy groceries. Shoes for the kids for school. What? $32? Okay. Anybody been shoe shopping at Target lately? A couple of emails about some of the topics we covered a couple of nights in a row here. This is from Susan in Sunny Squim. In Sunny Squim. That's in Washington State, right? Squim. It makes me think of something that lives in the sea, obviously, you know. Watch out, there's squim out there. Ah. Susan wrote, Mike, last night on your show, you and a caller were pondering how much the 1% could take from us before everything would be gone. You mentioned that even the mafia in your grandfather's old country never took it all. As you talked, I suddenly had a flashback to my early days in Alaska. I'm from the East Coast of the United States, raised inside the D.C. Beltway, and was very acidified when I was young. In 1968, I found myself relocated into the wilds of Alaska, clear out in the bush. In those days, the roads were poor or non-existent, and people only went to town for supplies when they had to. Most food was canned. Powdered milk, powdered potatoes were standard in the pantry, and the one thing that was never available out there was fresh bread. So, everybody made their own. But you couldn't just run to the store and buy yeast. And a yeast cake doesn't last. It only keeps for a short time. So what you had to do was what the old timers did back in the old days. You had to keep your yeast alive. What you did was get some yeast and mix it with a bit of flour, sugar, and water and let it multiply. This was your starter. It was called setting the sponge. Because the yeast would get all foamy, just like a sponge. You would use this as the base for your bread, but you had to be careful. Every time you set your sponge, you had to save some back. Put part of it in your starter jar and set it in a cool place for next time. You dare not use it all, because if you did, you'd never be able to make bread again. You had to feed it a bit of flour and sugar so it would grow for next time and the time after that. Your starter jar was always kept in a safe place so it would not die. And if you were careful to never use it all, always set your sponge carefully and save some for next time, why then you would always have plenty of bread. The 1% in America has forgotten this concept. They are using all the starter by squeezing the middle class dry. They are not setting the sponge properly. And soon the yeast will die, and they will not have the means to keep making bread. What on earth are they thinking? Susan in Sunny Squim. Wow, did you ever hear that, Kathy, setting the sponge? Oh, really? Well, your grandmother used to do that, right? I never heard that phrase. Never. Until Susan just enlightened me. From Steve, regarding the flesh-colored crayons. Mike, I'm just 41. However, I remember pantyhose that came in nude color, which was, you guessed it, peach or cream-colored. On another personal note, I had one of those moments myself. My former boyfriend is black. A number of years ago, I was talking to his mom about stuff. I remember she said to me, "I love this country, but I hate what it does sometimes." Mike, I couldn't understand how a black person could say that. Love this country. Then what occurred to me were all my assumptions about what black people thought. Inherent in my thoughts were, I think, the notion that I could know what black folks thought. This lesson taught me two things. One, that I can't know what black folks think, and to do so is inherently racist. And two, that it takes an enormous sense of patience and forgiveness to say such a thing. I know that that is something that I, as a gay man, don't have the capacity to do. Steve. What else we got? From Dane in Puyallup. Is that how you pronounce it? P-U-Y-A-L-L-U-P. Puyallup, Washington? Hi, Mike. I love the discussion you had about racism last night. I'm a 52-year-old male. Well, 53 in October. I was a kid in the 60s. I was born in San Francisco. I remember the race riots in the 60s when Martin Luther King was assassinated. And I do remember being taught and growing up around people who had a racist attitude. I remember bringing home someone who was black and was a friend of mine from school and being told by my parents, "We don't bring those people home with us." So I grew up having that attitude at times myself. But as I grew older, and with time realized more and more how wrong it is, unfortunately a lot of my relatives and people I grew up around and have befriended in life due to growing up to be different people still have the racist and bigoted attitude, of course. I always was the black sheep of the family, the liberal Fruit Loop, too. But I loved your discussion, and I didn't see you trying to label anyone a racist. You were just talking about something that is a fact about how most of us baby boomers, as well as probably people older, than as young as 40, grew up. It was wrong, but that is how it was, and what we were taught by some of our elders, Anyway, your show is always great. Hoping to see you in Seattle again this year. Maybe you have other commitments. I understand all that traveling is rough as well. No, I won't be going to the KPTK thing in Seattle this year. Dane from Puyallup. Puyallup? And Michael in Roswell, we were talking about stopping nuclear reaction once it began, whether it was controlled or uncontrolled nuclear reaction, chain reaction, and someone suggested chemicals. Michael wrote, "Chemicals such as boron or cadmium compounds do stop fission reactions by absorbing neutrons. This is why the spent storage pools leaking is such a big problem. Without those chemicals dissolved in the circulating water, the reaction rate increases, heat goes up, etc., etc. With big leaks, they can't keep the concentrations of neutron absorbers high and have to discharge radioactive water." This is regarding Fukushima, of course. Do you give any thought to how that problem in Japan is going to be resolved? I don't let myself think about that. That's a little bit too right out there on the edge of what I dare think about. You know, we all think about stuff that's scarier than hell. We all think about life and death and, what was it, man, woman, birth, death, and infinity. Go ahead, tell me what TV show that was from. But I can't think about the situation in Japan. I can't do it.
Say it's certain right, because a few of them are white, and it's the same crime. Molloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Anyone past the hour. So, in response to the Fukushima meltdown, which, if you just want to talk dollars, immediate dollars, it did about 50, 60, 70 billion in damage to Japan's economy. In response to all that, Germany has decided to close all its nuclear reactors by 2022. From Yes Magazine, this report, Germany, the world's most aggressive adopter of renewable energy, is taking a move toward a future free from nuclear energy. This past March, the German government announced a program to invest 200 billion euros, or approximately $270 billion, in renewables. That's 8% of the country's GDP. Last year, in response to the disaster at the Daiichi nuclear power plant, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced a plan to close down all 17 of Germany's nuclear reactors and replace them with renewable energy, mostly solar and wind power. Germany has already closed 8 nuclear reactors, and the rest will be shut down by 2022. And for now, natural gas is filling the void, according to Yes Magazine, left by nuclear power, which formerly produced 20% of the country's electricity. Now, under Angela Merkel's plan, 80% of Germany's energy will come from renewables by 2050. That's according to the German Advisory Council on the Environment. Studies by the council show that 100% renewable power is a realistic goal for the Germans. Now, in contrast, the U.S. has been much less ambitious. Obama's New Energy for America plan will try to supply the country with 25% renewable energy by the year 2025. Yeah, that'll happen, right? 80% of German residents want to see their country abandon nuclear power. But some Germans also have opposed new energy projects in their backyards. The website for wind power opponents lists more than 70 protest campaigns, most of which are regional grassroots groups organized to stop specific projects. You can imagine who's behind that, right? Germany's renewables plan will be expensive, but so was the Fukushima meltdown. Dealing with the effects of climate change won't be cheap either. Even German nuclear power companies are investing in the plan. Not only will this plan make Germany's energy infrastructure among the safest in the world, it'll provide many chances for economic growth. That's according to statements by Philipp Rösler, Germany's economics minister. Now, that's from Yes Magazine, and it was online, and then there were some comments afterward. Here's one. Germany is a world leader in forward-thinking energy policy. China's not far behind. The U.S., however, has had one forward-thinking president, Jimmy Carter. The rest following him play favor to the industries opposed to sustainable energy, namely oil, natural gas, and coal. So, we build up our military to try to control the energy future of China, North Korea, etc. Meanwhile, China uses their coal resources to build up hydropower and solar power, while we spend our precious energy overseeing energy flow in the Middle East through military consumption. And when the energy runs low, who's hurt the most? Well, the world's number one consumer of fossil fuels, the U.S. military. And thus will end the hegemonic reign of U.S. superpower. The empire will end before the end of the century, unless U.S. government is pushed in a new direction. Right. Here's another one. This is really a good move on their part. Go Deutschland. Yeah, the Germans are over their love affair with corporatism, fascism. It didn't serve them well. We Americans are still committed to fascism and anti-logic, apparently. It'd be funny to have to move to Germany to escape fascism, wouldn't it? And then this. See what can be done when you're spending trillions to bail out when you're not spending trillions to bail out banks and prosecute two pointless wars. Instead, here in the greatest country in the world, we pour billions into pipelines, fracking, and nuclear plants, and billions more into dismantling entire mountains to scrape out whatever crumbs of coal exist beneath them. And we follow that with aggressive campaigns to dismantle any remaining safeguards still in existence to monitor such things. If we took all of that money and all of that effort and focused it on looking to the future, we'd actually be able to live up to much of the grandiose self-congratulation we heap upon ourselves, and we'd likely end up with one of the lowest unemployment rates and highest standards of living in the world. But we'll never go that route as long as we keep believing that the two most important things in the world are giving huge sums of money to folks who don't need it and blowing up brown people. This is no time for any searchings. The future is at hand. This is no time for phony rhetoric. This is no time for political speech. This is a time for action.
Oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we'll be doing podcast trivia here in a little while, too. So stick around for that. Talking about oil and gas, you know, Bob Kincaid has been working diligently with the Coal River Organization to stop mountaintop removal. A lot of people are working to stop the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to Houston, Texas. Now, that pipeline continues to stay in the public eye. Mitt Romney, according to nationofchange.org, Mitt Romney gave it center stage in a campaign ad released yesterday or today. And the House Republicans attempted to attach to a drilling bill that passed this week a provision that would start the XL pipeline construction across the U.S. But what they're not talking about is this week it was reported that over the past few months, 1 million liters, or roughly 250,000 gallons of oil from several pipelines have spilled in Alberta. The Canadian newspaper The Star reported Wednesday that cleanup crews are working to prevent contamination from these three major oil spills. The Star put it this way, quote, the latest spill occurred earlier this week in northeastern Alberta near the town of Elk Point, where it was confirmed that a spill of about 230,000 liters through its pumping station, Enbridge's pumping station, at the Athabasca pipeline. The biggest incident was earlier this month near Red Deer and Sundre in central Alberta, where 475,000 liters of oil from Plains Midstream Canada Company leaked, some of it spilling into the Red Deer River, end quote. The Star. Now, according to Nation of Change, think about this. I mean, or don't. But this is what the Midwest and the Great Plains regions of the country. This is what you have in store for you. I mean, there's no way that this Keystone XL pipeline is not going to leak. Please don't be totally saturated by right-wing rhetoric and your own dumbassery to believe that this pipeline running from Alberta to Houston is going to be accident-free. Oh, it'll never happen. Not only is it going to happen, but it's going to be a monster. But millions of jobs are going to be created, right? Yes! Oh, boy! But I digress. This is not the first time, according to Nation of Change, this is not the first time the Canadian tar sands giant Enbridge, that's the name of the company, has been involved with an oil spill. In July 2010, one of its pipelines ruptured in Marshall, Michigan, and spilled an estimated 819,000 gallons. Even some proponents of the Keystone XL pipeline see these incidences as worrisome. Worrisome. Do you like that word? Worrisome. No, worrisome is when you are baking an elderberry pie from scratch and you're afraid you're going to burn the crust. That's worrisome. This is suicide. But proponents see these incidences as worrisome. And confidence in the tar sands extraction and transportation throughout Canada has clearly been shaken. For example, someone named Doug Bloom of the Canadian Energy Pipeline Association and president of Spectra Energy said, quote, "Any spill right now is going to be bad timing." God damn, don't you just love these people? It's going to be bad timing. He went on to say there's such a focus now with Gateway and the Keystone XL and other projects going through regulatory review. Anytime there's any kind of an incident, no matter how large or how small, it's going to be prominent. Ooh. And we don't want that. Not the incident. We don't give a goddamn about the incident. We just want the publicity. So, this 1,700-mile-long Keystone XL pipeline will run from Alberta down to Houston and move 435,000 barrels of heavy crude per day. And of course, you know this. I mean, environmentalists got their hair on fire about this one, right? If this thing leaks in critical areas such as Nebraska's Ogallala Aquifer, goodbye! Goodbye, freshwater! Do you like the taste of wheat with kind of an oily taste? These sons of bitches. I mean, why are we not out in the streets and the millions marching on these companies and standing outside the gates of their murder factories and telling them, no, goddammit, you're not going to do it. Why are we? Nah, we don't care. As long as that gasoline gets down to below $3 a gallon, we don't give a rat's ass, huh? Yeah. And I keep watching that. Well, I've become fixated. Look, I'm sorry. I've become fixated on that woman who speaks for the American Petroleum Institute, API. You know, those commercials, those institutional ads for API about shale oil. Hey, what's in store for America's future where it concerns energy? Shh, don't tell anybody, but we're going to goddamn kill you all. We are. Do you like my pantsuit? Isn't this a bitch? Huh? Don't I look good? Look at these pumps. Look at my hair. Shale oil. And I don't mention the tar sands anymore because they did some focus group stuff and decided, best leave that off the table right now. But hey, clean coal. Huh? We don't talk about mountaintop removal either, do we? No, of course not. You want to find out more? Shh. Go to AmericanPetroleumInstitute.org. Everything's right there for you. Oh, America's future is going to be beautiful. I'm just fixated on this. How can this woman do this? I mean, she reminds me of and there may be some poetic justice here. She reminds me of the Marlboro Man. who was real popular when I was a kid growing up, right? On television, every place. There he is, the Marlboro Man. And that poor son of a bitch died of throat and lung cancer. Huh? Right? Maybe something like that is in store for this American petroleum woman who stands there using her powers of projection to convince people watching. Oh, shale oil. Oh, look, she's got a diagram. You notice that diagram? Oh, it is so beautiful. Just this straight line. Way down deep into this nice clean earth, and there's no groundwater anywhere around, no aquifers, nothing. But what's that over there? Oh, look! Look, there's natural gas! Here, let's break the goddamn planet to get some of it. Crack! Ooh. Whoops. Whoops. TransCanada's own analysis shows that the Keystone XL pipeline would have 11, what they call significant spills, 11 over the pipeline's 50-year life cycle. While an independent study estimated there will be as many as 91 spills. The first leg of the Keystone pipeline has already suffered 12 spills in 1 year, a record for a pipeline's first year in operation. Yeah, bring that son of a bitch into the United States. Let's go, Republicans. Let's go, right-wingers. Let's go, you blue dog Democrats. Bring it on. God damn it, we want to die. We want to die as quickly and as miserably as we can. Bring it on. Yoo-hoo! As nationofchange.org says, although not always reported in the media, oil spills from pipelines, wells, and infrastructures happen so frequently that at this point, they are just part of doing business for oil companies. For example, a report from USA Today, of all places, found an average of 22 large spills offshore every year between 2005 and 2009. And yet, these spills have not deterred proponents of the pipeline. In fact, Canadian Premier Alison Redford has called for an investigation into the spills while still trying to get Keystone XL built over the Canadian-American border. Nationofchange.org. They have some info there for you if you want to check it out. 10 spills in the first year. The Ogallala Aquifer. Oh, goddamn, this is going to be great.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Oh, 10 before the hour. I got to stop screaming. This Keystone XL nonsense, and the fact that it's a Canadian company doesn't mean anything. These companies, all these oil companies are transnational. All of them. And every one of them is involved in destroying everything. They want to kill everybody and kill everything. And they're going to succeed. They're going to succeed. It's astonishing to me that we, you and I, are allowing this to happen. It's just mind-boggling. Oh, my God. It's just horrifying. Now, in this country, you know, I don't know how many members of the various parliaments in provincial parliaments in Canada or the national government, how many members of those governments are on the take from the oil companies. I know in this country, damn near every single Republican is on the take, and about 90% of the Democrats also. That's why, you know, don't count on your Democratic member of Congress to do anything to stop this. According to Rebecca Lieber at Think Progress, the House of Representatives, which already holds the title of, as the most anti-environmental House ever, today, Friday, added another mark to the list. It's called the Domestic Energy Production Act. The Domestic Energy Production Act, H.R. 4480. This act is specifically designed to increase oil and gas development with measures that specifically and deliberately block safeguards from smog and pollution. See, I mean, this is what drives me goddamn crazy. I mean, not only do they just ignore, I mean, just ignoring something is one thing, but including in the legislation specific directives that say you will not make any effort to cut down on smog or stop pollution. You will not do it. And you people wonder why I say they want us dead? Are you crazy? Are you kidding? Every freaking piece of legislation these people pass is designed to kill you and your children and your grandchildren. And they are succeeding. And what are we doing about it? Not a goddamn thing. Nothing. Oh, the H.R. 4480 also mandates drilling on public lands. So I'll tell you what, booby, you don't have any money to take your kids, you know, very far away from home. But if you take them to a national park one of these days, you're going to feel the rumble of the earth beneath you as you're picnicking. That'll be the fracking. You'll hear the thunk, thunk, thunk of drilling equipment as they drill for oil. Yeah, I mean, this is this. As Rebecca Lieber writes, the House Republicans passed this pollution and plunder energy package overrun by oil and gas industry interests, 248 to 163. Now that means 229 Republicans and 19 Democrats voted to further kill you and your family. And a Think Progress analysis of Center for Responsive Politics data shows how that oil and gas money overwhelmingly went to the votes for gutting safeguards from air pollution, drilling regulations, and public lands protections. The 248 members who voted for this, 229 Republicans and 19 Democrats, voted to pass the bill and enrich big oil. They received a total of $38.6 million in oil and gas campaign cash, or an average of $156,000 each for their campaigns. Of the yes votes, Republicans received $36.2 million. The Democrats got $2.4 million. The 163 members who voted no on this, 158 Democrats and 5 Republicans, the ones who voted to protect children and people with breathing problems from smog and ensure that our public lands could be enjoyed by Americans, not just used for oil production, they received $5.8 million or $36,000 each. So the people that voted, yeah, kill us all, they got $156,000 each. The people that said, no, no, don't kill us yet, they got $36,000 each. And the House is on track to collect a record amount of oil industry contributions this cycle, having already reached 2008 and 2010 levels. Coal company contributions to Congress are on track this year to beat a record $8.1 million spending, and House Republicans receive 85% of the coal industry's cash. You see why I maintain that there is no way in hell to reform the system? I mean, this is just one tiny example. I mean, you and I don't have an ice cube's chance in hell. You know it, and I know it. You know it in the bottom of your heart. I don't care how many dedicated people start how many websites and how many petitions. It doesn't mean a goddamn thing. Nothing is going to happen until millions of us get in the street and absolutely refuse to continue to participate in this. That's it, booby. If you want to continue your death cycle, do nothing. If you want to try to save your children's and your grandchildren's lives, do something. And you know what you have to do. Screw a bunch of online petitions. How many more are you going to sign? How effective has it been so far? Seven past the hour. If you would like to comment, the phone lines are open. 877-996-2556 is the number. 877-996-2556. On Monday, just passed, the first jail sentences were handed out to Occupy Wall Street protesters. They were convicted in New York, convicted of trespassing on property that Trinity Wall Street, which is an Episcopal church, said they owned. During an action on December 17th of last year, seven protesters were convicted. An eighth defendant, Mark Adams, was convicted of trespassing, attempted criminal mischief, and attempted possession of burglary tools. Jesus Christ. Adams is Occupy Wall Street's first activist convicted and sentenced to jail time in a group trial. Now, that action back in December was called Take Back the Commons, and it was an effort to reestablish an encampment a month after Occupy Wall Street's violent eviction from Zuccotti Park. The action took place at Duarte Square, a plot of then unused land a mile uptown from Trinity Church. But Trinity Church, who is apparently a powerful lower Manhattan landlord, claimed that they owned the land and therefore insisted on putting somebody's ass in jail. According to nationofchange.org, the trial lasted for more than a week and came after a series of political battles between Occupy Wall Street and Trinity Church, including protests, vigils, pickets, religious services, public statements by Chris Hedges and Daniel Berrigan, among others, and a petition with 14,000 signatures from all over the country demanding that Trinity not pursue the charges. You think petitions work? Well, this one didn't, huh? Because the eight cases, Nation of Change explains, because the eight cases were consolidated and tried at the same time, the defendants were represented by four lawyers from the National Lawyers Guild, but despite having a team of civil rights attorneys without a jury trial, these eight people's fates rested on the whim of a judge named Matthew Sciarrino, or Sciarrino, however you pronounce it, S-C-I-A-R-R-I-N-O, Sciarrino. The defense filed two subpoena requests for information from Trinity and the Lower Manhattan Cultural Council, which the attorneys, the defense attorneys, argued were not fully complied with, and thus grounds to postpone the trial pending full compliance. Several Occupy-related cases of mass arrest, including the arrest during the raid and eviction of Zuccotti Park on November 15th, have been postponed until the fall. But Judge Sciarrino decided that this trial would proceed despite the information missing from the defense's case. Gee, it doesn't seem fair, does it? Huh? This is the way NationOfChange.org reports this. In a politically charged trial like this, it was easy to feel as if the whole movement was on the stand, or perhaps already found guilty. The benches for spectators were packed with the defendant's comrades, and a larger-than-usual contingent of court officers walked around the courtroom like proctors of a standardized test. There were always at least five in the room and up to seven at any given time, scrutinizing onlookers. Another five officers stood guard outside the courtroom. On the first day, one woman was thrown out for attempting to turn off the air conditioner in the packed, frigid room. On the second day, the court officers, with the consent of the judge, emptied out two whole rows of spectators because someone in the vicinity had a cell phone that was making a quacking sound. The court officers ordered almost half the spectators in the room to leave, telling them they could come back after lunch, and in the meantime, to think about what they had done. Oh, Christ. When one of the defense attorneys objected, stating that this was a public trial, the judge simply noted it. Another incident on the second day of the trial was troubling for many in the audience. A court officer in a white shirt came into the courtroom with a photograph in hand of an activist who was observing the trial. He showed it to the other court officers, saying, "That's the one," pointing to the activist. This strange behavior was so disruptive that everyone in the back rows of the room could see and hear it, which introduced a lot of paranoia in a way that seemed to be intentional. For the rest of the day, the officers circled around that particular spectator. Jesus Christ, this is like being in communist Russia, isn't it? Huh? Soviet Union, right? A show trial. Other forms of intimidation were more subtle, but created a nagging sense of frustration and helplessness. The trial would alternate between two courtrooms in separate buildings, and the second time the case was held at 100 Center Street, four benches, which had been there previously, had been removed so that members of the audience could not use them. All this comes in contrast to the ruling made on June 7th, just before these trials began. Judge Jed Rakoff of the Federal District Court in Manhattan ruled in favor of Occupy Wall Street activists, allowing a class action lawsuit to stand against members of the NYPD relating to the mass arrests of more than 700 protesters on the Brooklyn Bridge in October. In his ruling, Judge Rakoff began by reflecting on the tradition of civil disobedience and how such acts can complicate the interpretation of the law. Now, back to Adams, Mark Adams, who is going to jail. NationOfChange.org says, though many of Adams' comrades were aware that he might end up serving jail time, the shock when the sentencing came down was palpable. They expressed their determination to support Adams through the entirety of his stay behind bars. A visiting schedule is already being worked out so that he has at least two visits from friends per week. People are already making care packages for him and helping to ensure that he is as comfortable as possible while imprisoned at Rikers Island. Now, throughout the trial and the lead-up to it, questions swirled about the extent of Trinity Church's cooperation with the prosecution and, by extension, the repression of the Occupy movement. While Reverend James Cooper, Trinity's rector, has stressed his efforts in urging the district attorney's office to offer non-criminal dispositions to defendants. Reverend James Cooper's participation was necessary for the trial to go forward. And while testifying, Reverend Cooper noted that civil disobedience was important to the fabric of protest movements, but he did not support it in this instance. Trinity's involvement with the apparatus of repression appears to precede December 17th, when all this occurred on the morning of November 15th, after the eviction of Zuccotti Park. Katie Davison, an Occupy activist and filmmaker, attended a meeting with members of Trinity's leadership. She says, quote, as the meeting finished up, I lingered for a moment in conversation with Linda Hannock, the public relations director for Trinity. We were discussing the eviction, and we had shown the clergy pictures of the violence we had witnessed at the hands of the police just hours before. There was a break in the conversation, and Linda leaned forward and said, just above a whisper, so you didn't know they were coming? No, I responded. She stared back at me, apparently surprised. I guess she had known all along. NationofChange.org. Check it out. Jerry Sandusky has been found guilty of 45 of 48 counts of all sorts of crimes, sexual crimes against children. He will spend the rest of his life in prison sentencing, probably within 90 days, if he doesn't kill himself before. And there's a very good chance that he will commit suicide. Why not go after the Catholic priests? Let's keep in mind that Sandusky, we don't know how many kids he raped, but he was charged with 48 counts against 10 victims. The average molesting priest probably has three or four times that number of victims, and yet those vile, rancid sons of bitches continue to preach the gospel of Jesus. So Sandusky will go to prison if he doesn't commit suicide first. And I just wonder about all the Catholic priests now who tonight have either fled the country or in hiding or are still ministering to some group of poor, miserable bastards who think that they're really gobbling up Jesus' body and drinking his blood every time one of these vampiric priests comes out and says, Amina, 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 give me your son, Amina, Amina, Amina. And yet these priests walk free. I'll be damned. So what do you call it? You call it justice, huh? Jerry Sandusky, poor old Joe Paterno dies of broken spirit. Oh, I know he was an old man. I know he had cancer, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, dear God, you know, I stay away from sensational trials like this. But this one, At the same time, a Roman Catholic Church official was convicted today of child endangerment, but he was acquitted of conspiracy in a clergy sex abuse trial in Philadelphia. And this guy is the first U.S. church official convicted of a crime for how he handled abuse claims. Monsignor William Lynn helped keep predators working with kids and kept the public in the dark by lying. By lying. Ten Commandments, screw the Ten Commandments. I pee on the Ten Commandments, this Monsignor must have thought. He told parishioners that their priest was being removed for health reasons, and then sent these child rapists to unsuspecting parishes where they could rape again. These are ministers of Jesus? These go ye therefore into all the world preaching the gospel? Really? Is that what these guys are doing? Huh? How long has this been going on? How many centuries? And this is the organization that tortures and burns people at the stake. Jews, Muslims, witches, pagans, Wiccans, agnostics, atheists, burn! Just keep the supply of little children's asses coming my way. Burn! My God. So, Jerry Sandusky, if he does live to go to prison, he'll be murdered there. You know what prisoners think of Short Eyes. That's what they call a child molester, Short Eyes. So how long do you think Coach Sandusky will survive in prison? And since I am not someone who forgives this sort of stuff, I can't. I simply can't. I've made that very plain over the years if you listen to this program. I can forgive a lot of stuff, but not this. I hope he suffers the tortures of the damned and in prison. I hope he does. I hope some of the most vicious, vile stuff happens. I'm sorry. I'm not able to rise above it. I claim it. I claim my vindictiveness. I claim my seeking for revenge. There are a lot of things that can be forgiven, and this is one that I can't. So torture the son of a bitch when he goes to prison. I'm sure that he will get a taste, no pun intended, of what he forced on these helpless little 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. You miserable, ghoulish son of a bitch, you. Ew. Let me go wash up. I'll be back in a minute. I'm with the God Squad. I'll tell you what. Jesus Christ is gonna kick your butt. I'm with the God Squad. Grab your gun. I'm coming to you live from Armageddon. Don't need to be teaching no biology. You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. No attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad. There's no place to run.
Monkeys on the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy. Here's something
8:25 before the hour. Kevin is in Colorado Springs. Hello, Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, hold on. There we go. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
Quite hot here in Colorado Springs for being near the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no global warming, though. I'm confident of that.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to comment. You talked about the petitions earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen some petitions work. Now, I agree with you that petitions aimed at the oil companies probably aren't going to do a whole lot because of the money that they inject into the system. But I have seen petitions on maybe the local and state level work. So I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, you're probably right. I mean, petitions to a local school board, petitions to a local public service commission, and those are important actions. And you're right. I probably shouldn't issue a blanket a denial of the power of petitions. But what I'm talking about is every single petition that I have seen in the past quarter century that was directed toward trying to influence federal lawmakers or the president or cabinet department to change or end policies that were hurting the public, not once have I seen a petition of that sort succeed. Not once. Now, if somebody wants to research that and find out that, oh, yeah, there it happened 32 times, oh, okay, I'll more than willing to be corrected. But I'm just talking from my own personal experience. And especially now that voting has become an exercise in futility for so many people. The restrictions on voting are getting more and more intense. The system has been so just unbelievably corrupted that anyone who thinks that petitions or working to reform the Democratic or Republican Party is going to work, as far as I'm concerned, is delusional.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree to a great extent. And what you said the other night about, you know, it's going to take people getting out in the streets, it's entirely true. I agree with you when I say you have to work outside the system. I will vote, but I know it's an exercise in futility. But I still respect that right to vote enough to go out to the polls and vote. But I'm not naive enough to think that that's going to change things. And I wholeheartedly agree. You've said it a million times. And I don't know how much more you can say it or I can say it. That's what it's going to take.
I don't either. All right, Kevin, thanks. I appreciate
it. Have a good weekend.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Oh, by the way, after the next break, podcast trivia. If we can get some players. I don't think we have any listeners tonight, Kathy. Except the people in the Malloy chat. I think everybody's out having fun. Or certainly not paying any attention to the Malloy show. Well, it's okay. I understand. From Prairie 2, under the subject line, Frickin' Geniuses. Careful there, Bruce. The foreign markets dipped sharply overnight here after yesterday's downgrade of the 15 largest U.S. banks. But today the U.S. market simply shrugged it off. The excuse was that the banks had set aside funds in anticipation of the downgrade. It might also have to do with the fact that proprietary trading done by these banks is a huge chunk of the daily trading. The average holding time of any single share of stock is now measured in the single digits, not years or months, but seconds. The banks do something like 60% or more of the total volume of stock trades on their own dark markets. This is why we have no idea who owns what stock or the trading price. In other words, we don't know what the real market is doing in the back room. And the front operation could be up or down by computers trading back and forth in nanoseconds. So fast is the trading and at such ridiculous volumes that there is a real estate boom in lower Manhattan. The race to see who can get their supercomputers a few feet closer to the exchange floor, or rather their server, and thus a billionth of a second faster in the trades. You also have no idea what is going on with your 401k in any real sense. During the 2008 crash, the markets lost half their value. When they regained their previous high early in 2012, the average 401k had only recovered 49% of its losses. Just because the banks have all been downgraded, you might think the masters of the universe on Wall Street don't deserve the $155 billion in bonuses they took last year. They're freaking geniuses! The Dodd-Frank Act allows for much of this activity to be curtailed and even done away with. But so far, the Republican House, along with Republican appointees to the various regulatory commissions, have stalled action and refused to fund any reform. Mitt Romney has vowed to repeal this unwarranted intrusion on the free market. Another frickin' genius. The price of gasoline is collapsing. It isn't that the oil companies and Wall Street speculators are giving Obama a gift, not intentionally. We are swimming in gasoline. You see, they don't make gasoline. It's in the crude oil. The oil companies must sell it or burn it to get rid of it. I suppose they could use it in some sort of fracking solution. That's what they do with other refinery byproducts that they can't sell. Just pump it into the ground. They used to put all the benzene and such into the gasoline, and you got to pay them for giving you cancer. So you see, they simply have too much gasoline and must encourage consumption by cutting price. The corporate media is really talking of vacation driving, despite the boost to the economy that this will produce. They are in this spot largely because of fuel efficiency gains. This has come partly because of years of high prices, but also from Obama's Cash for Clunkers program, moving consumers to buy more efficient vehicles. This, in turn, boosting the auto industry. That would be the same auto industry Obama saved and Romney wanted to sell to China. This auto recovery has helped boost the economy of blue states and even some red swing states. Romney has sent out a memo to those governors to stop talking about the improving economy. He can't win if the economy looks better because of things Obama has done. Especially with Obama pointing out that most of the new companies that Romney created were outsourcing specialists. Oh, and those banks? The rapidly falling gas prices will allow them to harvest money from hedge contracts that they sold to all the suckers. The Republican noise machine convinced them that the price would go to $8 a gallon. Quite a margin call if you can swing it. Frickin' geniuses. Prairie2.com. Yeah, he has reported to us before, and I think you know this, that so much of the trading done on Wall Street, it has nothing to do with what used to be called the small investor. It has absolutely nothing to do. It's just churning the market. Drive it up. Sell. Drive it down. Buy. Drive it up. Sell. Drive it down. Buy. Woohoo! Ain't this fun? And Prairie 2, of course, is right about the trades done in nanoseconds. You know, somebody sees a stock. By the time, if you go sit in your local broker's office and you watch the ticker, if you watch the ticker and make a decision based on what you're seeing, forget about it. What you are seeing on the screen, you know, as the numbers float by, what you are seeing happened in time billions and billions of years ago, relatively speaking. Those numbers no longer exist. So you're saying, oh, look, it just went up a quarter of a point. Buy 100 shares of that for me. And by the time you do that, of course, it's already down. They just take your money. No? Doesn't work that way? All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, if there anybody wants to play, we're going to play podcast trivia. We'll be giving away a one-year gift subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial-free. All you have to do is answer our trivia question, multiple choice, correctly. If you do, all sorts of wonderful things will happen to you. Not only do you get a one-year subscription to the Molly Show podcasts, but your luck will change. You'll hear bluebirds in the morning. There'll be rainbows over your apartment or house or mobile home or encampment. Trust me about this, all right? We'll be back. Oh, yeah, the number's 877-996-2556. The lines are open. And I know they've all been talking about me. Get the right answer to our multiple choice question, and you will win a 1 year gift subscription, a Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free, sent to your device every single morning. Let's see who we have to play tonight. Oh my goodness, there are a couple of people, Kathy. Skip is in Poway, California. Hi, Skip.
Hi, Mike.
All right, you ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's start the magic music, and off we go. The Southern Baptist Convention made history this week. Now, this is the Christian organization founded in 1845 following a split with Northern Baptists over the issue of slavery. You can guess which group supported it. Now, how did the Southern Baptist Convention make history this week? Did they A, declare Rush Limbaugh is the Antichrist, B, passed a resolution stating that Southern Baptists could no longer attend Sunday services if they had participated in a Klan rally on Saturday night, C, they elected an African-American to be president of the SBC, or D, they declared Glenn Beck is Satan?
C.
You're absolutely right. They elected an African-American to be president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Way to go, Skip.
Thanks, Mike. I love your show.
Thank you very much. I'm going to put you on hold, Skip, and Kathy will get the necessary information, birth dates of your children, sample of DNA, and other minor information that we collect when we give these things away. The phone lines are open if you want to call in. I got an email here from Michael in Roswell during the break. We're talking about oil and gasoline, blah blah blah. Michael writes, "We've been hearing the phrase reduce our dependency on foreign oil for two generations now. In fact, ever since OPEC effectively quadrupled the price of Saudi oil from $1.50 a barrel to $6.50 a barrel in the space of 3 months in 1973. As if that is the sole reason for calls for new drilling, you know, reduce our dependency on foreign oil." The very strange thing about this is that about 30% of refined products produced in this country are exported. Where do people think most of the Alaskan North Slope oil actually goes? In fact, to Japan as number six fuel oil. But anyway, are people even wondering why there hasn't been a new refinery built in this country in nearly 40 years? There have been a number of abandoned idle ones that have been refurbished and recalibrated to take heavier crude feedstocks, particularly by Valero Oil Company. But why is it that it's so damned important to pipeline some of the dirtiest hydrocarbons known to man across the entire United States to refineries in Texas and Louisiana? Why? Well, because those refineries aren't operating to capacity. And because most of the refined products from that feedstock are going to be exported, and by definition, they aren't reducing our dependency on foreign oil, because it is foreign oil. The simple truth is that we've created a system of subsidies and preferential tax law for the oil companies, and are dependent upon oil products. Oil product exports to partially offset huge imports in other sectors. Drilling on public lands is an important part of that system because of the tax advantages it creates. And if a company does find oil on public lands, the royalties paid are smaller than to individuals. And if someone like George W. Bush is in charge of the executive branch, well, the government kind of sort of forgets to collect the royalties due the American public. And then gives the oil companies some room to fudge production figures if some meddlesome outside group notices what's been going on. If only the average citizen would think, every time he hears, reduce our dependency on foreign oil, that the phrase actually means, the government's duty is to maximize the profit of America's multinational oil companies. Because the oil companies don't care where the oil comes from as long as they can maximize their per unit profit, either through trading crude or maximizing the so-called crack differential at the refinery. We are fighting energy wars at this very moment, not to gain access to oil because we've always had that, but instead to maximize the profit of oil multinationals and to deny other countries access to oil and gas. We want to believe that we are Bedford Falls, but in truth, we've always been Pottersville. Michael in Roswell. Yeah, reduce our dependency on foreign oil. Yeah, right. How many times have you heard that in your lifetime, truth seeker? I don't care how old you are, if you're 25 or 85. How many times have you heard that? We got to reduce our debate. Democrat and Republican, they all say it. And it's a complete fabrication. It's nonsense. It's bull hockey. It's not true. As Michael points out, as Prairie 2 has pointed out, as a lot of people have pointed out, it's nothing to do about reducing our dependency. It has to do, as Michael just very succinctly pointed out, it has to do with increasing or maximizing the profits of the oil companies. They don't give a goddamn where the oil comes from or where it goes. It doesn't matter. Drill, baby, drill. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join in. Joe is calling from somewhere on the road, I guess. Let's see, XM. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mike. Pleasure to talk to you after all these years of listening to you.
Oh, really? You haven't called in before?
Nope. First time. I talked to Kathy, but not you.
Oh, okay. Well, hi.
Good to meet you. Hey, Mike. Did I hear right that not one drop of that filthy oil that they're piping down to Houston, not one drop of the refined fuel is going to stay in America? Is that right?
Well, that's what I've heard. It is being piped to a refinery in Texas. I didn't know about the Louisiana one until this evening, but refined to an area of Houston where the refinery or refineries sit in an export zone, which I guess gives them certain tax advantages. Well, obviously, by definition, if something is being made in an export zone and their tax advantages for doing that is not for domestic consumption, it's going to be sent overseas.
Right. So it's a lose-lose situation for the folks in middle America.
Right. It's gotten to the point, though, that it's a lose-lose situation for everybody.
I can't see it. I just can't see any upside to it.
Well, I can't either, except for the oil companies. They're the ones who make a fortune on this. They are the ones who own their share of the Congress, the banking industry, the speculators. They own their part. The energy companies own their part. I mean, just go right down the list. The timber companies own their part. Pick an industry. It's been divided up. It's like the five mafia families that used to operate in the Northeast. They just divided up the territory.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. And they don't even pay taxes on the money they make.
No. Taxes? Why should they pay taxes, Joe? That would screw up the whole deal. Taxes? You know, my God.
and Willard's running around like as soon as we get this pipeline built, gas will be $1.40 a gallon again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you. Well, Mike, it was a pleasure chatting with you. And you know what? I see why you have a license to carry now.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation today in a restaurant, and I nearly got assaulted because I thought free health care or government-sponsored health care was a good thing.
Yeah, no, you don't have too much choice anymore if you take a certain position. There are too many armed and crazed Christians out there who would just as soon put a bullet right in the back of your head. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? It's scary. They are crazy.
Yeah.
They are. I mean, you can't reason with them.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
That's why it's better to be armed and dangerous yourself.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Drive safely, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. Well, you know, every time the subject of the Keystone XL pipeline comes up, it really gets me upset. Let me just put it that way, upset. Because there's no reason to be doing this, except to increase the what did Michael call it, or Prairie 2, or somebody, the per unit profit, or maybe it was from nationofchange.org, the per unit profit to these oil companies, whether that unit is a barrel or a gallon or a liter or a thousand cubic feet or whatever it is. It does not benefit in any way, especially these tar sand oil or the fracking that's going on in this country now. They're literally trying to break the United States into pieces. And this injection of industrial wastewater that we talked about the other night, what did I say, 30 trillion gallons? It was some number followed by trillion gallons of garbage, of chemical waste, of the liquid that is just being injected. I mean, what the hell? What the hell? You know, we get focused on the byproducts of byproduct of nuclear power generation, you know, plutonium, and what to do with it. Oh, God, where do we put this? Do you know anything about nuclear power plants? Do you understand what is, figuratively speaking now, what is stored outside nuclear power plants? What? Do you know about Yucca Mountain? Notice how that's dropped off the discussion, the area of discussion. By nobody talks about Yucca Mountain anymore. Where is that? Nevada? Deep, deep underground salt mines or something where they were going to put these thousands of tons of nuclear waste that have accumulated since, what, 1945? I mean, we're coming up on 100 years of nuclear generation for either weapons or energy or whatever. Where do you suppose the waste has gone? It hasn't gone anywhere. It's just sitting. So the whole Yucca Mountain thing, well, we bury it real deep, which may or may not have been a good idea. I remember years ago reading about how linguists were being employed by whoever was in charge of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or whoever was in charge of trying to put this idea together. And they had to come up with linguists who could write something in God knows what language or languages to inscribe on plaques and placements around Yucca Mountain that would last for thousands, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, on the theory that if the human species was still walking around, there had to be something to warn them to stay away from this place. And what language were they going to put it in? How many different languages? And how could, you know, that essentially said, abandon hope, all ye who enter here, or something like that. Or, Eve, don't eat this apple. Or don't go here. Don't go here. Don't open up this tomb. Don't drill. Don't come anywhere near this place. Remember that? Remember that? You don't ever hear about Yucca Mountain anymore, do you? Ever. So where do you suppose the nuclear waste is sitting? In little swimming pools? Pools of water? Or in, I'll tell you what they were doing to it over here in Barnwell, South Carolina. They were just burying it in cardboard containers. Now we're talking about plutonium. I remember one time as a spy, I was active in the anti-nuke movement here in the South, and I disguised myself as an interested citizen and went on a tour of the facility that was being run at the time by, I think, Westinghouse in Barnwell, South Carolina. And they took us into the plant and showed us a chunk of nuclear material. And the guy, plutonium, the guy held up a Geiger counter, and then he put a piece of paper, just a normal piece of paper, between the plutonium and the Geiger counter. Beep, 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 beep. Like he said, well, these are, I don't know what they were, beta, gamma rays, whatever. He said they're very easy to stop. All this nonsense about people worrying about plutonium is just that. It's nonsense. Plutonium won't hurt you. You know, unless you breathe it in or something, or eat it. We'll be right back.
This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. Had there been an actual emergency, your local station, in conjunction with the relevant federal authorities, would have broadcast the following pre-recorded announcement.
Dum dum, diddle dum dum, diddle dum dum, diddle dum dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He'd duck and cover, duck and cover.
See, that's something else. Again, if you remember the flesh-colored crayons, you also remember duck and cover. God, I remember those drills in elementary school. Yeah. We'll come to your phone calls here in just a second. From Kathy in Maine. Mike, did you hear about the House vote today that opens up more domestic oil drilling and gas production while loosening environmental controls and, to top it off, allows for more federal lands to be made available to drilling? Yeah, we talked about it earlier tonight, Kathy. But anyway, she goes on, and the Republicans, as well as some unsavory Democrats, say that at this time, when the country desperately needs industry jobs, they couldn't possibly raise taxes or fees on the oil companies. Oh, no, 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 no. Another big win for big oil. Michael and Roswell had it absolutely correct. Big oil doesn't care where it drills as long as drilling is possible in order to raise their profits so they continue to buy our legislators. The good news, if there is any, is the bill is likely to die in the Senate. Happy Friday, Kathy in Maine. That is the mantra, of course. On the one hand, you know what these Republican devils continue to say. Barack Obama has created no jobs, and every environmental protection has to be destroyed. Mother Earth has to be gouged, gutted, ripped, teared, raped, brutalized, burned, punctured, and irradiated in order to create jobs! Why, of course. What happens when you befoul your own nest to the point where you cannot live in it any longer? Where do you go? From Fionn, Mike, the following is a quote from the introduction to an album by Gus Brett. The album is titled Orphan of Love. I've had this album, Fionn writes, since 2005. It is an amazing album also. I think the words that you're about to read are from other sources. Gus put them all together. I wish I could point you to a place where you can hear it online. If I find the place, I'll send you the link. Here's the quotation. Entertain them. Your job is simple. Enter their minds at birth and lay there dormant until it is safe to assert yourself. Use pleasure and pain, black and white, right and wrong, to keep their minds from becoming present. For it is within the present moment that you can be brought to balance. And balance is your nemesis. Keep them addicted to food and sex and work and drugs. Keep their minds in a frantic, fog-like dream and fast their every activity. And soon, soon, your voice of judgment will become their Messiah. Send your message of fear into every medium that they have invented. Communicate your madness to billions. Make death their greatest fear, then rob them of their lives. They will follow. Never relinquish control. Never let them see the truth that they are all connected, safe and loved, free to live with grace and love. For if the truth be known, you will lose control. Ow! Back to your phone calls here, Truth Seekers. Ricardo is in Colorado listening on XM. Hi, Ricardo.
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
No, I am a truck driver. I'm originally from Argentina, and I have been here for like almost 20 years, and it's amazing how much the whole country, people don't see it because normal Americans, they have been born here, they don't see the difference between before or than other places, but it's amazing how much this country changed in the last 20 years.
Last 10 years.
Yeah, but I came here in 95, and I have been driving all over. Even now you can see how much they are destroying all the North Dakotas and the South Dakotas, the Lula, almost like locust, with the fracking and the whole dealing over there.
You know, I was having a conversation with somebody recently. I don't know if it was online or if it was something I read or if it was actual conversation. Things kind of mushed together for me lately. But the conversation was this. People still emigrate into this country looking or immigrate. What's the word, Kathy? Come into this country. Let me put you on hold, Ricardo, because I have to do a break here. People still come to this country from other places on Earth because of the reputation of the United States. And yet, more and more people from other parts of the planet who come here all of a sudden find out that it's not what they thought it was going to be. In fact, it's worse because the dream is not there. It may be different from a certain kind of fascism or militarism or dictatorship that they come from, but they're aware that we're drifting in that direction.
Religiously, I'm speaking on a science, 'cause we gotta live on science alone. I tell you what.
Hey, Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
All this fussing and fighting, man, you know I sure 25 before the hour. I guess our caller, who was originally from Argentina, had to go. Quick email here. We have an open line if you want to call in, 877-996-2556. Again, from Michael in Roswell, regarding Yucca Mountain or Yucca Flats. Michael writes, Harry Reid managed to get the Yucca Flats project put on hold. And let's face it, the earthquake in the early 90s that destroyed most of the computers and monitoring equipment there helped stop the project. But that's why it's not a subject of discussion right now. Yucca Flats, despite being earthquake prone, was just the least worst of the three siting possibilities. The government considered one outside Hanford, Washington. Obviously, that was a matter of convenience. It would make cleaning up Hanford less expensive. But since all the substrate there was basaltic rock subject to microfracturing, the risk of migration of materials into aquifers and groundwater was exceptionally high. But just to show how crazy the government was at the time about this, one proposal, a serious one, mind you, was to punch a hole into and through the Oglala aquifer and put the waste underneath the aquifer in Deaf Smith County, Texas. Now, this idea, too, is a matter of convenience. The Pantex nuclear weapons facility was nearby. Now, the planners asserted incredibly that this scheme was viable because they could seal the hole through the aquifer with a giant rubber donut. And this was for a facility that was supposed to remain intact and dry for a minimum of 10,000 years. And now the truly goofy part. Deaf Smith County, Texas, is the center for wheat seed production in the nation. Oh, Jesus Christ. I got to get out of this business. I really do. It may be time, Kathy. Man. See, if I weren't in this business, this talk radio madness, I wouldn't expose myself to any of this, Kathy. Could just not have to deal with this. Not think about it. Just, you know, throw balls for Rusty to get. Play with Molly. Oh, that's right. We have a mortgage payment. Never mind. Clifford is listening on XM. Hey, Clifford.
Hey, how you doing?
You're driving in Oregon.
I am, yeah.
Well, welcome to the program, Clifford.
Thank you. I was just offering a little bit of a voice of dissent here, if I can.
Sure.
I know I've had the opportunity to tour the oil sand project in northern Alberta.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just got to say, I truly think, the Canadians up there are doing a great job on soil reclamation and that kind of stuff. You look at they've been doing it up there for, 30, 40 years, and you look at the stuff they've done, 20, 25, 30 years ago, even probably 10 or 15 years ago, you'd never know they'd been there. They're doing a fantastic job of reclamation.
Do you know what the term Potemkin Village means?
No.
Okay. It's a phrase that comes from Soviet history. They would build phony, I'm simplifying this, they would build phony facades of villages that they would take people through from other countries when the great Soviet experiment of collectivization and how happy everyone was living in the Soviet paradise, they would take them through these Potemkin villages, and what the tourists would see, what the visitors would see, would appear to be, call it reclamation. Everything just looks so nice.
Well, I have relatives and family members that live in the area that have lived there for 30 years. I mean, it's not.
And good for them, Clifford. But here's the point. It's not how they cover up the soil. What we're talking about here is extracting the oil from the tar sands and then shipping it and refining it. It is that, and then burning it, however it's going to be burned, in engines, in electric generating plants, that is the destructive part. It's not how they cover up the scars and holes in the earth that they're punching. Anybody can do that. Hell, you and I could do that. That's not the issue, Clifford. The issue is what this stuff is releasing and will release in both the extraction and the burning process into the atmosphere. It's going to kill us.
I suppose you're right. Something's going to kill every one of us.
Well, something is. Yes, we're all going to die. But for Christ's sake, do we have to make sure that our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren won't have a chance at living? That's what we're doing. Let me put it this way, Clifford. I don't give a damn about dying, okay? When my time comes, however, I don't believe in this predestination crap, but when I die, fine. But why should I leave a mess here that guarantees that my children won't live as long as I did, my grandchildren don't have an ice cube's chance in hell, and my great-grandchildren will never even be born? I mean, that is egomaniacal greed and self-centeredness that's off the chart. So when you talk to me, Clifford, about how nice things look around the Alberta tar sands, I can take you to places in this country, I'm sure. I don't know where they are, but I'm sure I can find them where there's a nice, beautiful playground and green grass and maybe even a pool. And if you go down 100 feet, you find a burbling, bubbling cauldron of the most toxic poison ever left behind by industrial America, just waiting to sink into an aquifer or kill your children, Clifford, or make you sterile or make it so you will never have a child, you'll never have a life, and you'll drop dead at age 55 from cancers all over your body. So, Clifford, please don't talk to me about how they have reclaimed the land that they are gouging into. That doesn't mean anything. Clifford, thanks for checking in. Honest to God, thank you. But it looks so nice. It really does. Okay. Okay, no offense, Clifford. I'm not going to pick on you. You're like so many millions of us who have been kept in just wallowing in our ignorance. Just totally unaware of the damage and the destruction, not just the immediate damage and destruction, but the short term, the long term, the intermediate term. I mean, you can't continue to dump your own feces in your nest over and over again and continue to pollute everything that you touch and breathe and drink and eat and just keep it up and keep it up and keep it up and expect to live. You can't do it. The planet, Clifford, and anyone else who gives a damn, is finite. It doesn't go on forever. The oceans are not endless. That little thin skin of atmosphere that we have that makes us unique in the solar system, if we destroy it, we're goddamn dead. It's that simple. And so are our kids and grandkids and great... never mind. Never mind. Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hello, Jim.
How you doing, Mike?
Hey.
Once again, another great show. You're right on. I mean, you're talking about Fukushima in the beginning, and it just started me thinking. I remember when nuclear energy was, you know, they were just starting to build them. And
Yeah, me too.
And, but even back then, you know, I was like in my late teens, I just remember wondering where they're going to put the waste. And now that's what, 30, 40 years ago?
I bought the story, Jim. I never paid any attention to that. I was told, in my classrooms and in the stuff that General Electric put out, there was this little cartoon character called Reddy Kilowatt. He was a little character. Do you remember that? He was made out of red lightning bolts, and he had a little funny head, and he had light bulbs for ears or something. And what we were told was that nuclear power was going to generate energy so cheaply that there would be no point to even meter it. They would just run a wire from the nuclear power station to everybody's house. And it would just, I mean, utopia was right around the corner. Hold on a second, Jim. Let me take a break. We'll be right back. Jim in Las Vegas. Okay, Jim, thanks for holding on.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's just, I've just seen this, you know, I've seen this coming for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, and you think, when you're younger, you think, oh, somehow we'll snap out of it.
Right.
Somebody will catch a clue, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I'm like you. I want to be optimistic, but it's when you live in reality, it's pretty hard to be optimistic.
Yeah, that's the truth. Because the decision maker, damn, I can't talk. What the decision makers, I don't care if they live here, Europe, Asia, South America, I don't care. What the decision makers don't seem to understand is that we are all interconnected. You know, they make fun of that. They say, oh, that's that 1970s new age hippy dippy stuff, right? We're all interconnected. We are interconnected. I mean, there's no way to get around that. And fouling everything up in Australia guarantees that the United States is going to suffer. Fouling everything up in the United States guarantees that Turkey is going, and just on and on like that. I mean, it cannot be avoided, especially now with jet travel and something that happens in a certain part of the world very quickly shows up in another part, and this interconnectedness that the right wingers, especially, I don't care if the right wingers are American, Canadian, German, it doesn't make any difference. What the right wingers don't seem to understand, and they want to belittle, is the fact that we are all interconnected. If I am doing something that is polluting the atmosphere, it's an atmosphere that you are going to breathe next week or next month or 10 years from now. I mean, let's face it, we're breathing the same atmosphere that the ancient Greeks breathed, or the Genghis Khan breathed. There's no new oxygen coming to this planet by UPS. I mean, everything that's here is here. And if we don't take care of it, what I just said is not totally true. But if we don't take care of where we live, if we don't take care of our nest, we're just, I mean, what's the point? What's the point in pretending? You know, like the guy that called about and said, well, the tar sands area, everything looks neat and nice. Okay. What's the use in pretending? I mean, why not recognize that we're interconnected? Why not recognize that Jew and Palestinian wanting to kill each other is insane? That Chinese in Tibet and Americans in the rest of the world and all this stuff is madness. So why not get sane? Never mind. What am I talking about?
I know. I mean, I'm at that point where I'm about to just give up hope. I'm not, but it's just...
No, I know the feeling. You live right on that edge where you think, you know, what the hell is the point? And then you keep thinking, well, there's got to be a point. You know, there's...
Yeah, then there's that commercial, like the woman you were talking about. And I see that on, quote-unquote, the liberal MSNBC.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, oh, man, I mean, you're talking about, nuclear energy, or what's she talking about?
Yeah.
Oh,
Oil, petroleum, the American Petroleum Institute. That's, you know, institutional ad. She's talking about the stuff that is killing the planet. And she smiles. I mean, that's a death figure. That woman, the only thing missing from her is a huge scythe in her hands and a hood over her head. But she just, you know, she stands there and smiles at you and says, hi, I'm the death lady. I'm here to kill you. I'm here to kill your kids. I'm here to kill the planet. Hi, how are you? Am I not cute? Am I not beautiful? Do I not have fine cheekbones? Do I not have a well-tailored suit? I am here to kill you.
Just like the Fox News chicks, yeah.
About the same. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you checking in. I mean, it's just every time I see that woman... You know, she's been the spokesperson now for the American Petroleum Institute for what, a year or two? And I'm sure that when they got her through an agency, they said, okay, listen, Giselle or whatever her name is, we're going to make you the image of API. You're going to be so wealthy. You'll never be able to work again because people are going to identify you with us. But we will make you fabulously wealthy. Here's what we want you to do. As we are killing everything on this planet, we want you to make it sound like we're not. Can you do it? Well, of course she can. Of course she can do it. She's an actress. Of course. Hi. You always thought death was a faceless, ancient-looking, tattered robe hood-wearing, scythe-carrying creature, right?
Yes.
That's not death. That's a cartoon. I'm death.
Yes, but you're a beautiful woman. You look like some of the women I see at the PTA meeting.
Exactly. That's it.
You're death?
Yes. Well, okay. That's how crazy I've become. When I see the API institutional ads and that woman come out, I can feel different parts of me scrunch up. You know, guys, you know what I'm talking about. Shrinkage, just like... just... I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kenny, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.